Chapter 10. Terra, the Imperial Palace.
The Father of Mankind has been your shield and your sword for millennia. Will you show your gratitude? Will you stand for Holy Terra? Will you answer the call of the God Emperor?
Ecclesiarch Mesring's voice rang out from the wall-mounted vox speakers. His words were heard throughout the Imperial Palace. They had followed Galatea Haas everywhere for days now. Even in the arbitrator's bunkhouse dormitoria, the recruitment call looped. She had barely slept since the crisis began. Now she was lucky if she managed to shut her eyes for more than an hour at a time. When their shift ended and they were back at the command post for the Cathedral of the Saviour Emperor precinct, Otmar Kord asked her,
"Are you coming?"
"Where?"
She was sitting on her bunk and had just stored her equipment in her footlocker. The other two were still kitted out.
"To the recruitment field. We are,"
he indicated Baskerline and himself.
"Both of you?"
"Most of the station, I think."
She'd heard the talk.
"You're all really going through with it?"
Kord looked baffled.
"Of course we are. Why did you think we wouldn't?"
"Because we are sworn to the Adeptus Arbites, not the Astra Militarum."
"You can't mean that."
Now it is her turn to be confused.
"Why not?"
"You don't intend to answer the call?"
"It isn't for us."
"Isn't it? Then why do we hear it?"
"It's being played across Terra, Otmar. There are no exceptions being made."
"Exactly."
She shook her head.
"We're needed here."
Why couldn't he see that?
Kord looked disappointed. "I never thought you would be the one to lack faith."
She stood up and stepped into his personal space. They were the same height. Her face was centimeters from his.
"I won't allow you to question my devotion to the Emperor."
"Then why?" Kord began.
"My duty is here, so is yours. Will you leave Terra defenseless?"
"Listen to yourself. Our duty is to defend the Imperial law, not Terra."
"What I meant?"
Baskerline didn't let her finish.
"I think you spoke with your heart," he said.
She hesitated. Kord said,
"If Terra falls, there will be no law to uphold."
Still, she said nothing. She wasn't sure if she wanted to convince Kord or have him convince her.
"At least come with us and see," he urged. "Decide then."
What harm in that? She wondered.
"The Emperor sees into your soul,"
Mesring's voice proclaimed from the dormitorium speaker.
"He knows the truth of your devotion. But do you? Prove it to yourself. Know that you are worthy of joining the ranks of the saints. Lord or serf, we are summoned one and all. There is only duty. There is only one answer."
"All right,"
Haas told Kord.
"Bring your armor and weapons," Kord said.
"Why? Are we expecting trouble?"
"No."
His eyes shone.
"Victory."
The Clanium Library looked much as it had before the Battle of Port Sanctus. The maps, the chronometric displays, and quasi-spatial projector still sat on the shelves. The paraphernalia of Lansung's theatre hadn't been removed, but the displays were inert. The library was derelict. A veneer of defeat, as tangible as dust, as cold as wax, had settled over the space. It even coated the man who leaned over the dark hololithic table. He held a bottle of Amasek in one hand. Two more lay empty on the floor. Lansung didn't look up when Vangarich approached.
"What do you want?"
he said. The High Admiral slurred, but Vangarich doubted he was as drunk as he'd hoped to be by this point.
"I want your help,"
the Grand Master said. Lansung snorted. He took a drink from the bottle. It clunked hard against the table's surface when he brought it back down.
"Then you're in an even sorrier state than I am. My condolences."
Vangarich ignored the self-pity.
"We know what we think of each other," he said.
Lansung toasted that with another swig.
"That we do. Then you know that I've never doubted your skills in battle. Flatterer! So why are you being an idiot?"
Lansung finally looked up.
"What do you think of Tull's crusade?"
Vangarich asked.
"It's doomed. So why lead it? I never tagged you as suicidal."
Lansung toasted that with another swig.
"That we do. Then you know that I've never doubted your skills in battle. Flatterer!" So why are you being an idiot?
Lansung finally looked up.
What do you think of Tull's crusade?
Vangarich asked.
It's doomed.
So why lead it? I never tagged you as suicidal.
No choice,
Lansung said.
If I don't lead the fleet, I'm a coward.
So?
So?
If the effort is doomed, what does it matter to you that you're saving face? You'll be dead.
What are you saying?
That you must stay. If Tull's scheme fails, Terra will need something to hold the orcs back until help arrives.
You're putting a lot of faith in a single flagship and her escorts.
And her commander.
Lansung looked thoughtful. He didn't drink.
And if the proletarian crusade fails, because the autocephalax eternal left the civilian fleet to be slaughtered?
With the number of ships involved, how much of a difference will the autocephalax make?
Lansung shrugged.
Some.
He frowned. Vangarich watched him work out the vectors of the coming Void War.
In the end,
he said,
the fleet will get through or it won't, regardless of the Navy's assistance.
Then hold back. Live a bit longer.
Eyes exhausted by failure, Lansung said,
and can I quote you, Grandmaster, as having urged my cowardice?
You mean your sanity.
The fields of winged victory had not been true fields for over 1,500 years. The last trace of greenery had burned during the siege, and the area had been paved over with rockcrete during the reconstruction. The name retained some justification in the fact that this was one of the few large spaces of the Imperial Palace that was open to the sky. It covered over 1,000 hectares, and its normal use was as one of the great parade and exercise grounds for Terra's regiments of the Astra Militarum. Though the material of its surface was utilitarian, it was painted with giant reproductions of the regimental arms. It took a company's worth of artisan serfs to keep the heraldry in good repair. The fields were lower than the surrounding regions of the palace. As they walked down the boulevard of the Militant Witness, Haas had a good perspective of the activity. The preparations for the myth the proletarian crusade would surely become were a wonder in their own right. The volunteers were pouring in by the thousands along roads feeding into the southern third of the fields. Along the periphery, administratum officers channeled the arrivals towards the hundreds of registration stations. The ranks of the stations took up the middle third of the fields. From there, the recruits moved towards mustering points in the north section, where shuttles took them off to the starports. Thence, they would be transported to the waiting ships in orbit. Haas paused at the top of the descent. Awe robbed her of movement and breath. From this vantage point, she saw the shaping of a confused flood into ordered geometry. She was looking at a great army in the process of creation. Out of the street crowd came phalanx upon phalanx, each 1,000 strong. She knew that most of the people below had never held a weapon unless they had emerged from the underhives, for Mesring's voice had reached there too. These were civilians, not soldiers. They had no training, nor would they receive any. There was no time. And yet, as the phalanxes moved turn by turn to the shuttles, the vision was one of military precision, of the individual transformed into a sublime war machine. The people were nothing as simple as cogs. Their incorporation into the greater being was at a much more intimate, more elementary level. Cogs were still components. Here, at the end of the process, the individual had ceased to be, its existence making way for a new, larger whole. A molecular alchemy. Haas started walking again. She caught up to Cord. Stunned, he had slowed to a stumble. They had lost Baskerline in the flow of the crowd.
Where is the embarkation?
Haas asked.
It's happening now. The Armada is launching tomorrow.
I just came to see, Haas told herself. I just came to see. The refrain was weak. Even stronger than the physical current was the rush of purpose. For the first time in days, Haas no longer heard Messring's summons. Another voice spoke to the assembled volunteers. Massive picked screens, 50 meters on a side, rose above the edge of the fields at regular intervals. They all showed the same recording. Jaskina Tull towered over the recruits in all her magnificence. Mesring was the voice of the call, but hers was the voice and hers was the face of the crusade itself. It was her vision that had been given material form. She wore robes of purest black and a diagonal sash of deep crimson. She gave the impression of being in uniform, though the design did not belong to any regiment. She was regal, yet humbled by the people who were making her plan come to pass. She was imperious, her profile cold in its perfection. In her bearing, she was a colossus, presiding over the shifting formations of insects below. Her voice was the ringing iron of command. But in her words, she was welcoming. She was warmth. She was the delight of triumph.
"Warriors of the Proletarian Crusade, I thank you for the struggle you are about to wage."
She paused. Her smile became ferocious.
"I thank you for the victory to come."
The fields of winged victory echoed with a roar. Haas had faced the great scream of the masses when the orcs had arrived. Now she was swept up by their desperate challenge to the enemy. There was an edge of hysteria to the joy, but it was real all the same, and Haas joined in. She and Cord were now a few steps away from the administratum officials controlling the flow at the end of their street. In the recording, the speaker for the Chartist captains paused, her smile becoming almost gentle. The illusion was perfect. It seemed to Haas that Tull really saw the masses and listened to their cry and waited for the people to have their moment. Then she spoke again.
"You are not trained soldiers, but you are warriors. The ships that you will board are not warships, but they will wage war. And know that you will have at your side the strength of the Imperial Guard."
She turned her head, as if focusing on a different group in the grounds below her projection.
"Let yourselves be heard, heroes of the Astra Militarum, Granite Myrmidons, Auroran Rifles, Jupiter Storm, Eagles of Nazca, Orion Watch."
As each regiment was called, another roar went up from different regions of the field. The bulk of the Astra Militarum contingents were not mustering here. They were being transported directly from their barracks to the Armada. But entire companies from all of them were present. They were being attached to the civilian formations to give them direction and boost their bravado even more. Haas understood the purpose behind the integration. She could see how perfectly orchestrated the operation was, and she found it very hard to care, because it was all necessary. If the Proletarian Crusade was to be successful, the participation had to be massive. And it had to succeed, she thought. The consequences of failure were so dark that she couldn't consider them. No one of faith would dare. She barely noticed that they had passed the administratum checkpoint and been channeled towards a registration station 3 rows up and 10 aisles over. The queue was long, but moved steadily. Haas couldn't take her eyes off Tull, couldn't turn away from the message being voxcast across the fields of winged victory. She had difficulty remembering why she had come here in the first place. To observe? Really? What was she thinking? What sort of faithless coward came to observe the heroes and martyrs and then walked away? She brought her hand to her belt. She tapped the handle of her shock maul. More than a weapon, it was her staff of office. It represented the task to which she had devoted her life. She had to be sure that she was not abandoning her duty for the sake of selfish adventure. She closed her eyes for a moment. She could still hear Tull's speech, which had looped back to praise the Chartist captains. She was shielded, though, from the sight of the speaker's overwhelming charisma. She knew what she wanted to do. She had to know that it was the right thing to do. Movement ahead of her, Cord walking forward, eyes still closed. She took another step, still thinking.
"You're coming. You know you are," Cord said.
She kept her eyes shut.
"I don't know. I refuse to be derelict. When have I ever been?"
"Never,"
she admitted.
"I'm going because I...
His voice trailed off. A hush falling on all sides, like a cold wind blowing over the fields of winged victory. Tull's voice carrying on, but sounding less convincing without the answering shouts. Sounding hollow. Tull opened her eyes. Everyone was looking up. The blood had drained from Cord's face. So had the fire in his eyes. The orc moon had risen. The sky over the fields had no obstructions. There were very few other locations in the Imperial Palace where so much of the firmament was visible on those rare occasions that the smog of terror cleared away. This evening, the stars were out. They were eclipsed by the fortress. It rode the heavens with brute arrogance and made a mockery of the Emperor's sacred home. Haas stared at the planetoid. Her heart swelled with a pure, sanctifying hatred. She had her answer. She was going. She would tear the laughter from the throats of the orcs, even if she had to do it herself. She would bring darkness to that accursed moon.